good to see everyone back here this afternoon for a short time. We're kind of going over a lesson idea, I want to say maybe 10, anywhere from 10 to 12 months ago. I think it was just shy of a year. But I guess the title for this afternoon's lesson will be A Counsel for Better Living. It will come from the book of Ecclesiastes. And throughout the chapters, the first six chapters, is basically the idea that's been shared with us of the writer's search for meaning. This is found in the first couple of chapters of Ecclesiastes. And then his observations during the course of his search. And this is kind of talked about, the idea is shared throughout chapter 3 through pretty much chapter 6. Before this afternoon, we're going to be focusing on Ecclesiastes, the 7th chapter. And for the end, we'll be reading verses 1 through 14. Here the Bible reads, "A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of a fool. This also is vanity. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. The end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Do not say, where were the former days better than these? Why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense, but the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Consider the work of God. For who can make a straight, can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him." So throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, the writer has repeated his conclusion time and time again, and is mentioned once more in chapter 7, and basically stating that life under the sun is vanity. Ecclesiastes 1, chapter 1, verse 14 says, "I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. But there is good that we can do, that is provided that we are blessed by God." Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 24 through 26 reads, "Nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity, when grasping for the wind." So in relating the experiences of the writer's search and the writer's observation and what we may be able to glean from it, he shares counsel for living life here on this earth as we know it, or living life under the sun. For example, he talks about the value of friendship. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12 reads, "Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. And threefold cord is not quickly broken." He also gives an example talking about the proper way to approach God in worship. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 1. Walk prudently when you go to the house of God, and draw near to hear rather than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they do evil. In the remaining chapters, the preacher continues to share his counsel, continues to give advice and give information that may be beneficial to the reader. That through a mixture of proverbs and also through a mixture of narration, he tries to impart wisdom designed to make the most of life under the sun, the life as we know it here on this earth. An example, while life under the sun is vanity, as he mentions, how then should we live? So there is wealth of wisdom found in these chapters. There's a lot of information that we can take from the scriptures in this regard. There's too much to cover in detail, specifically just one talk or one lesson given. And we'll just simply take in consideration the counsel as we make it through this particular chapter. So with this in mind, we can take a look and find a couple of comparisons. One, honor is better than luxury. Proverbs 22, verse 1 reads, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. He talks about and extols the value of a good reputation, and that precious ornament is a representative of luxury. As we read through the scriptures, we know that when it talks about precious oils or ointments or things of this nature, it's referring to or giving examples of luxury or, conveniences rather than necessities. So why is this so? We already know the vanity of wealth. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 18 through 19 reads, then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. So we know vanity of wealth, but also we may leave it for someone who is foolish. Unless God gives us the ability to enjoy it, it is all for naught. Sometimes we focus so much on being humble and not wanting to strive or not wanting to be consumed with wanting things or being materialistic or gaining wealth. And much like the example Brian gave us this morning with those who are trying to sell the water, you know, to try and take advantage of others that are also wanting to, I guess, as for lack of a better term, strike it rich quick, get the reward without the work. But that's not to say that there weren't those who were represented in the Bible that were wealthy, but were also considered righteous or considered good in God's eyes. The love of money is what's wrong with this scenario, not necessarily the wealth itself. As a matter of fact, in Ecclesiastes 6, chapter 6, 1 through 2, the Bible reads, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires. Yet God does not give him power to eat it, but a foreigner consumes it. This is vanity, and it is an evil affliction. A good reputation finds honor before God and men, and benefits us even after death sometimes. Growing up, one thing Dad always kind of told me, and I believe he learned it from his dad, is that there's a lot of things, when we enter into this world, we enter in with just our name. And that's pretty much what we take with us as we go. and what we leave behind in a way as well. Sometimes that's all we have after our days here are over, is our last name and what it represents. And of course, long story short, it's talking about making something of that name and how you'll be remembered. And so a good reputation will last even after we are gone. And there's an example of this found in Hebrews chapter 11, where it talks about the elders of the Old Testament. In chapter 11, verses 39 through 40, the Bible reads, "And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise, God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us." So there's importance to our name. And there's importance to how we represent that name and how people perceive that name, especially if our names are written in heaven. It's a great thing. So what's another example? Well, one is that our death day is better than our birthday, as it is mentioned. The day of death can be better than the day of one's birth. Of course, this assumes one has first made a good name for themselves. So how is this so? Well, the day of one's birth is the beginning of many sorrows, as it were. As a matter of fact, Job chapter 14, verse 1 says, "Man who is born of woman is of few days and full of trouble." So what we need to kind of consider, take in consideration, though, is who's saying this? You know, that kind of sounds a little dark in some regards. And when you first read that, you're thinking, well, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. But we got to imagine what Job might have been going through during the time when he mentioned this. Job was going through quite a bit. And so when we first enter into this world, we know through the scriptures that we are going to have trials. We are going to have tribulations. We are going to have sorrows. We are going to have things that that we'll have to endure. And so the day of our birth, from that day, these are some of the things that we can anticipate and expect. Not to say that there aren't blessings as well, but sorrows are definite. But for the righteous, the day of one's death is the beginning of eternal bliss. One, it mentions that they enter into peace and rest, found in Isaiah chapter 57, verses 1 through 2, the Bible reads, "The righteous perishes, and no man takes it to heart. Merciful men are taken away, while no one considers that the righteous is taken away from evil. He shall enter into peace. They shall rest in their beds, each one walking in his uprightness." Also, they go to be with the Lord. Philippians chapter 1, verses 21 through 22 reads, "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor, yet what I shall choose, I cannot tell." And then also, they are blessed to be at rest from their labors. Revelations 14, verse 13 reads, "Then I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, Right, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Yes, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works follow them." So what else can we learn? Well, another consideration or another thought for us to think about is how maybe a funeral is better than a party. We read about this in Ecclesiastes 7, verses 2 through 6. Talks about better to go to a house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. You know, everybody loves a party. Unless sometimes you're kind of like me and have anxiety with some of those things where it's people that you don't know and don't quite know what to expect. But for the most part, it's a time of celebration. And so most people will enjoy that type of atmosphere. But everybody needs to attend a funeral. You may ask yourself, why? Why would you say that? Well, the Bible tells us why. The Bible tells us, for that is the end of all men. Life under the sun, or our lives here on this earth, is not forever. We must all die and face what follows next. The Bible also says that the living will take it to heart. A funeral for the passing of someone that we may know or care about reminds us of a short life that we have here on this earth, and that death will reach us all. Funeral forces us to face reality and encourages us to prepare for it. The Bible reads, sorrow is better than laughter. The writer explains further why it's good to attend a funeral. We know that laughter may have its place, but sorrow is superior for making the heart better. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11 reads, now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. It kind of makes you start thinking about some things as we go through our lives. When you think about the different types of people, you think about the people that anytime they've needed anything, it's been readily available to them. But then you think about the people, same age, that have had to strive and had to fight tooth and nail for everything that they've had. They've had a rough life. Now you put the two side by side. Out of the two, and I'm sure y'all have been able to do this comparison in real life situations, out of those two people, who seems to have learned the most in their life? It's usually the person that struggles. It's usually the person that has endured much. In a way, so it is when it comes to someone who may attend only parties versus someone who has had to attend far too many funerals. It teaches our heart. It teaches us about what it means to be here. What it means to be able to open our eyes one more time in the mornings. Laughter provides a temporary reprieve from the burdens of life. But sorrow, especially at a funeral, encourages us to make positive changes. For this reason, the wise person will be found often in the funeral parlor, while the fool would rather spend time at a party. The writer also lets us know it is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than to hear songs of fools. At a funeral, one is likely to hear the rebuke of the wise. At the party, sometimes we do hear songs of fools. But the laughter of fools is like the crackling of thorns in a fire and is vanity. Why does it use this as an example? Well, I don't know if y'all have ever been to a bonfire and used all different types of ways to try and keep it lit, whether it be paper, whether it be mesquite, whether it be bushes. One thing that we know, if you've ever used a bush of thorns, it makes a loud crackling and it makes a lot of noise. But they burn quick. They provide little heat. They are therefore of little value when it comes to keeping a fire. So also is the laughter and songs of the foolish. He also tells us in Ecclesiastes that the end is better than the beginning. We find this in chapter 7, verse 8. So this is similar to what we've already seen, that the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. But the principle has more applications than just one's overall body. So you may ask yourself, well, how is that? Well, as we know, many projects that we have in the world, many projects that everyone has, always start with good intentions. but are not completed. It's when they are finished that we can truly look back with satisfaction. Many things begin with grief and difficulty, only to end in joy and peace. Psalms 146, verses 5 through 6 reads, "Those who sow in tears shall reap, in joy. He who continually goes forth weeping, bearing seed for sowing, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him." So our primary concern should be how things will turn out in the end, rather than how they may look at the beginning. Throughout the scriptures, we see examples of not needing to focus on where we start, but focus on where we are at the end of our journey. Put it, for example, in our daily lives. There are those who might have been born and raised into the church, and there are those who may have come to the church and come to Jesus at a very late time in their lives. All that matters is where you will be when our time is in. We learn that patience is better than pride. Continuing in verses 8 and 9 of chapter 7, that the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Pride is evil and is of the world. Patience is a virtue to be pursued by the man of God. So why is patience better than pride? Well, we know through God's word that pride leads to contention and destruction. Pride also leads to anger, which resides in the heart of the foolish. We read that before in chapter 7, verse 9. And patience, on the other hand, is indicative of wisdom and necessary to salvation. Another idea of wisdom that leads to better living is understanding that the present is better than the past. Moving to verse 10. We are not to say, why were the former days better? People often reminisce about the good old days. I can say that I do that quite a bit as well. I think we all do as the days go on and as we get a little bit older in age. We think about all the experiences and all the things that we did in our past when we were younger. We often complain that things were better than they are now. I know a term, simpler times, always kind of comes up in conversation these days with everything that's going on in the world today, with all the hustle and all the bustle that we endure. But we got to be careful, because when we think about this, we are in danger of being very unwise. Memory has a way of forgetting bad things in the past, because we tend to only want to focus on the good things when we dwell on the past. Even if one experiences trials in the present, there is a cause for rejoicing. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4 reads, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." We may neglect opportunities for much good in the present by dwelling on the past. I don't know if y'all ever tried this, but it's very hard to see where you're going when you're driving down the road if you're too focused on looking in the rearview mirror. We've got to focus on where we are now and where we are heading, and not reminisce, not focus on where we've been. Moving on, we also learn that wisdom is better than wealth. Wealth has its advantages. We can all agree on that. Money can serve as a defense in life. Proverbs 10, verse 15 reads, "The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty." Money can attract many friends. Proverbs 14, verse 20 reads, "The poor man is hated even by his own neighbor, but the rich has many friends." But wisdom is much better. It's hard to determine who your real friends are when you're rich. Wisdom is by far superior to any wealth we can have on this earth. Riches do not profit one in the day of wrath. Proverbs 11 verse 4 reads, riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. I think a couple of examples come to mind. Maybe business partners that may fight over who gets the money. Wisdom gives life to those who have it. And wisdom will make the best use of one's wealth as a defense. Wisdom will help one weather the storms of wrath. It's not bad to be well off or to have a lot of resources at your disposal. But without the wisdom to be able to put those where they need to be, it's all for naught. And lastly, down in verses 13 and 14 of chapter 7, we know that resignation is better than indignation. We all know that there are some things that we cannot change. God has His purpose, which we cannot change. We are told this multiple times in the Scriptures. Just a few to reference is Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 13, as we read before. Isaiah 43, verse 13, and Daniel 4, verse 35, just as some examples. His purpose allows for both days of prosperity and adversity. We need to deal with this in the best way possible. We need to enjoy the days of prosperity. In days of adversity, consider what lessons we might be able to learn. It does no good to get angry about things we cannot change. As we saw earlier, there's both a time to weep and a time to laugh. So in conclusion, to kind of wrap everything up, what has the writer taught us about us looking into this? Well, simply just a few things. One, honor is better than luxury. Your death day is better than your birthday. A funeral can be better than a party. The end is better than the beginning. Patience is better than pride. The present is better than the past. Wisdom is better than wealth. And resignation is better than any. We need to consider and bear in mind that it comes from one who experiences everything life has to offer, who found life under the sun lacking, who offers counsel from the perspective of wisdom and inspiration, and who provides this counsel that we might make the best use of our time on this earth, or time under the sun. So I guess we kind of need to ask ourselves, or we need to always kind of have the idea in the back of our mind, are we willing to accept the counsel of our Savior Jesus Christ and able to accept the counsel of those who are inspired to write God's Word? What will we learn the hard way? And often, sometimes often too late to do much about it. At this time, we want to offer an invitation to any of those who are subject to the gospel call, or to any of those who wish to receive the prayers of the church, whatever the case may be, we would ask that you come as we stand and sing the song.